when you were born and where?
I was born December the 10th, 1894. Uh-huh. And I was born in the edge of Nebraska, but my parents really lived in Kansas. I was over there to my grandma's, you know. That is, my mother was her mother. And I grew up in Kansas, in Norton County, Kansas. Uh-huh. And I went to school there. And I was a little late getting through the grade school because I was out one whole year with scarlet fever.
Oh, my goodness.
I had scarlet fever when I was 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
But then as soon as I graduated, then my sister was coming along, and we lived 12 miles from town.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, we didn't have a car.
Uh-huh.
In fact, no one did.
Yeah.
I remembered the first car I ever rode in. I remember the first time. But anyway, it took us a long time to go to town and back, you know.
Uh-huh.
And the nearest high school was in this town. It was called a county high school. It wasn't called community high school. It was for the whole county of Norton.
Yeah.
And so I waited until my sister was ready to go to school. So in that time, I went to the little country school, even after I'd graduated from the eighth grade, and just sort of read. And I was kind of was taken with a study of words.
Uh-huh.
And I used to read things, you know, and it took me a long time to get through, because every word that I didn't know what it was, I looked it up in the dictionary.
Uh-huh.
I had a great big dictionary, uh-huh. You know, the regular school dictionary.
Yeah, sure,
there.
Sure.
And I'd write it in a notebook, and then I'd write down how it was used, and then I'd make a little sentence with it. Then I'd go on. The teacher got so disgusted with it, and she said, "Aren't you ever going to get through reading that book?" But I said, "No, I'm just enjoying it and digesting it as I go." I remember that. And then I went to high school, and I was, by that time, since I graduated when I was on 14, and I was 14 when I graduated in the eighth grade, and I graduated from high school in 1915. We had a class reunion on our 50th in 1965, and that was the only one we'd have. And out of a class of 43, there were, I think, 24 there, but only five of them had died in 50 years. It really was.
Oh, it must have been so much fun.
And it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And we had our reunion there, and this gal, that one of our classmates, was the master of ceremonies at the banquet we had, and she had us remember what that said about us in the annual, in the year that we graduated, and then tell us in one. She gave us, I don't remember, I believe it was 5 minutes. To tell what we had done in the 50 years since we'd graduated. And it was
I know,
but it was really fun. And she was quite a person herself. She'd lost her husband in the First World War, and her son in the Second World War. And at the time she was teaching in Mexico, I believe it was, but she came up there to the, I didn't mean to get off on that, but,
interesting. Yeah.
But,
Mary, what did they say about you in the high school year?
That she had a little, this woman that was acting as a mistress of ceremonies there, she had us remember, see if we could remember what it was. What was said about us, and she was kind of a poet in a way. She said, anyway, I can't remember the exact words, but it was that I finished whatever I started, that I was.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that I had been all through my, and I it was, But, of course, I was just a little bit older than the ones in my class, and not all of them, but some of them I was, and most of them. And we didn't have any valedictorian then, but we did average up our grades for all of them. And one young man and I graduated for the high, you know, we had to share the honors. But, of course, I did have it kind of over the ones that were a little younger, because I had to stay out of school at least 1 year in high, you know, when I was sick, and 2 years before I waited, so I was a little older than the others. I should have made better grades than I did. So, I was always terribly interested in music. Mm-hmm. And we had a full hour's work in music, that is, grade school, school music, public school music, and I took it all 4 years.
Oh.
That I went to high school.
Uh-huh.
And I enjoyed it so much that I did real well in it. Uh-huh. And of course, we used to give an operetta every year, and I managed to be in that. And
didn't you tell me you played the trumpet?
Yeah, I played the trumpet, and for a little while, really, that was more out in the country than it was in town. I didn't play in the high school band, but I did play the trumpet, and my sister played that. And I've dabbled around a little bit with so many different instruments. I took a few lessons on a violin, but I didn't have a good violin, and I couldn't afford any better one. I got disgusted with it and quit. And I've had piano, and I went to Western State College for a while, after we moved out here. But this all took place in Norton, Kansas,
yeah.
Norton County, Kansas.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then I was married in 1919, just at the close of the First World War.
Now, where did you meet your husband?
that was rather funny. He... my folks lived out in the country.
Uh-huh.
And I told you it was 12 miles from town. They lived there all of my life on that one time. All of my life. They'd lived there some before, but most of my life, no. It wasn't all of my life either, because I think I was going into the fourth grade when we moved there, but all the rest of the time, until they died, they still owned this place. There was a girl going to school in town. She didn't get what she wanted in a little country school, so her folks paid her board and had her go to school in the same town where I was teaching the eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to come out, and her folks were neighbors to my parents, and we used to come out in the country to spend the weekend. And she was going with a young man that was a nephew to this man that I married, and as we were going to go back to town, he was going to take us back to town, and he brought his uncle along with him, and that was, it was St. Patrick's Day, and he had a little shamrock on his head. I never will forget that. And his buttonhole when I first met him, and then I went with him afterward. But of course, I'd gone with other fellows before that. In fact, I was going with one young man. It was in the First World War, and he died. He was in a hospital overseas on the day that the armistice was signed. but then later I went with this man and married him. He was over 13 years older than I am. And so he was 38 and I was 24 when we were married. And he said, well, this thing of having a golden wedding, we never will. He says, we're too old. But we did.
You did.
We did. makes it look like it's 14 years different, but it wasn't. It was over 13, though.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and that was in 1919?
And that was in 1919, and we were married, and he lived in Nebraska. We lived a short time in Nebraska until we moved in, and then we moved down to Norton, Kansas, to a farm down there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my first child was born.
Mm-hmm.
I lost him, He died when he was only 17 months old, just within, just a week before my second one was born.
Oh.
It was a very hard time for me at that time. I wasn't even able to go to the funeral. He died. We buried him on a Saturday. My other son, my next son, was born on Tuesday.
My goodness.
The 28th of December.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had another son and one daughter. After that, but they were spaced out quite a bit. The first son wasn't, you know, because he's only 17 months. Between the first two, there's only 17 months. So about 18 months would have been if he had to come a little bit soon, but not much. And then when my little daughter was born, we lived in Colorado at that time. Well, we were right in the dust bowl, and my husband had been in a crop, and here we'd come along that wind, and we got so discouraged, and we got a chance to trade our equity in the place that we had there in Kansas for a farm at near Crested Butte. It was a cattle kind of a place over there. They didn't raise any hay. And the reason why they did that is because this man had inherited this place, and he lived really in Nebraska, in Kearney, Nebraska. And it was too far for him to see about and take care of it. And he thought if he could get that one there, he could dispose of that and turn it into cash sooner than he could. And so he traded this for it. And we got... And we moved out here, but I had taught 3 terms of school, and my husband came out here and looked at it first, and he decided he wanted it, and he found out that this school, it wasn't right in Crested Butte, it was a little school called Glacier School. It was just a country school just about 5 miles below Crested Butte, down toward Gunnison, down that valley. And that they did not have school in the wintertime because of the high... At that time, the roads were not kept open as they are now. And so he told them that... Well, I was teaching at the time in Kansas. I had 2 little sons... And there was a school that lived right close to where my parents lived that knew me from the time before I was married. And their teacher decided to resign at Christmas time and get married. So they asked me to finish that term. So I did, and I used to take, and the first, we didn't have, the first, my first check that I got from teaching, I bought a little Ford coupe to go back and forth.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I would take my kids up there to my mother's and leave them, and then I'd go over there to teach. But I couldn't stay there. It was a little too far to go back and forth. I couldn't stay there. I just left them with her. And now on Friday night, I'd pick them up and go back, and we'd spend the weekend down to our own home there. And I'd wash up the clothes and do things like that, you know, and then take them back. Well, I was teaching there at the time that my husband made the agreement out here that I would come out to teach. Well, the school here, it was a 9-month school, all right, but it began in March.
Oh, strange.
And ran through the summer because of the snow.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
And I taught clear up to Friday night. They got there was still another month's school left there in Kansas, and they got a substitute for me. And I taught on Friday night there, clear up Friday night, and come a big rain, and my husband came up there. Yes, he came. He was there. I don't know how he got there. I don't remember that. But I know that he came to the place where I was boarding and got me and brought the kids. And, I left the boys with my mother while I came out here. But anyway, we went to back down home there, and I packed things in a great big trunk, everything that I wanted to take with me, and then we, I came out on the train over what was Marshall Pass then. You know, on the train it was called Marshall Pass, and the road's called Monarch Pass, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Marshall Pass on the train. And when I was going, they told me that at Gunnison, I should tell the conductor that I wanted to get off at Quick's Ranch. I never heard of such a thing as stopping right out there. But they did.
They did.
So I told them down there at Gunnison, the depot was in a... now, remember, this was in 1927. The depot at that time was down in the, what was it called, the La Vida Hotel there. So I told him, I says, I don't know how you're going to do it, but they told me to tell you that I would get off at Quick's Ranch. Okay, he said. Well, sure enough, and it was a coal train, and it was a single narrow gauge railroad.
Going up to Creston.
Going up to Creston to get the coal, because Creston Gibbon was a coal town in those days. And
there you were on a coal train.
There was, and I had to ride on the caboose. And when I got up there by Quick's Ranch, he stopped. And here came Mr. Quick out there, and I never saw so much snow. And they was, they'd had a trail out to the out there. They'd been taking their cream cans. They had a kind of a dairy, and they'd been taking their cream cans out there to the train. And so they had a trail. And the way they'd do that, you know, they'd walk on the snow, and then there'd be some more snow, and they'd walk on that until their trail was just tramped down. It'd be soft on each side and so on. But they got and they tumbled my big old trunk off onto the snow there and went off 11. There was Mr. Quick and I standing there. So he took me into the house. He took me into the house. And they had a few people boarding there. His wife, his name was Fred, Fred Quick. And she was so quick, I've often wondered what became of them. They moved out. I don't know where they are now. Maybe dead. But... I taught there 3 years in that school. And in the between time, I went to school. In the winter time, I could grab
a quarter at
Western State. And I took a lot of music there. And I taught it in the school. Well, in fact, I taught it in the school in Kansas, too, before I left there. They passed a law in Kansas that everybody, all of these little... See, they had little country schools all over out there, you know.
Yeah, all you had to have was something like 5 children and you could start a school or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So there were a lot of...
Well, it was divided into districts, and if there were that many, why, they had school. If there weren't, why, they'd send them someplace else.
Yeah.
But anyway, I took music and English.
Uh-huh.
The things that I really...
Really
I really cared about, and so then I taught there for 3 years, and by that time I found out I was going to have this little baby. Oh, I had 2 sons, you know. Well, when I first came out there, I came out all alone, you know, on the train. Well, that summer, when it got to be a little bit, I think it's about June, I was able to rent up Taylor Creek. There, a little cabin from some people, and I walked from there to school, and I sent for my mother, and she came out with the boys and stayed there with me, and I had taught that school, and then my husband stayed home because we were farmers, you know, and we did have a little crop, you know, although we did live in the dust bowl there, we had some things to take care of, and he didn't come out until... well, it must have been about September. The school lasted from March about the 7th. Oh, it was a little later than that. March the 17th or someplace, something like that, clear through to November. It was a 9-month school. And when he came out, why, we had... we took and packed a few things in the kids and in my little old coupe.
Mm-hmm.
He drove the coupe out. And we sit down. And we drove back to Kansas.
Uh-huh. It must have taken a while.
It took a little while, yes. And we got back there and had a farm sale and sold off. He tried to send me a few things when I was out there, in the way of furniture, but they didn't come through very well, and I hesitated to send my piano that way.
Yes.
So we sold the piano and everything,
uh-huh.
And then came back, and we had an old log house on the place that we'd traded for. That hadn't had anybody living in it for quite a while. We fixed that up and moved into that. And I kept on teaching. I taught for 3 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was getting a wonderful check. I got $110 every month.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes,
that
I did.
That was good wages.
That was really good wages then.
Sure.
And that may be $1,000 in a year, over $1,000. $990 in a year.
Yeah, sure.
And every time I bought some equipment for the farm, we came out there. We sold everything because we had debt, so we came out here with anything. Sometimes I'd buy a heifer. Sometimes I would buy a cultivator or something. You know, we didn't have any cultivators, no. Hay buck. That would be more apt to be a buck rake that I bought. Anyway, I bought something like that. And I taught there for 3 years. And we finally accumulated quite a few cows, and the only thing we could raise there was hay. About we raised some good timothy and clover, and we'd bale it and sell it to the mines. At that time, the mines used to, instead of having these continuous miners like they have now, they used to go in there with mules and and they'd buy this baled hay for the mines. We sold it to. Sold it to the mines.
But you were bringing in most of the cash income then from your teaching job.
Yeah, the cash income I was.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. In fact, I kind of grub-staked all of our cattle operations.
Now, by that time, it was 1930 and into the Depression.
Yeah. Yes, it made some difference, but then we got along. And then the boys went to this little school. That I taught there, I had them in my school until the daughter came out, and I quit teaching there, of course. But then when they got ready for high school, the roads still weren't open, and it was pretty hard. It's pretty hard for them to get up there to school. We had to have, there wasn't old enough. And they wanted to charge us too much tuition anyway to go up there. Why they should charge us, because we didn't belong right in that district. We really belonged in Jack's Cabin District, I guess down below. But anyway, we were closer to that one. So we got to looking around for a place where we could send them to school better. And we used to come over here to Paonia. And look around, and we found this place down below, 3 miles down the road here.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And we moved here in 1940
uh-huh.
and brought them. And by that time, the little girl, well, she was, the boys went to high school up there some, but she, when she was ready to go, I mean, went to school there. The oldest boy graduated from high school at Crested Butte. The next one was going to school there. And the little girl was she was 7 years younger than the youngest boy, 10 years younger than the other one. And she came over here and entered school here, the grade school.
Mm-hmm.
And this next boy, Adrian, one that lives up here bowing now, he graduated from the high school here in 1942.
Uh-huh.
And... the oldest boy went to Coyne's Electrical School in Chicago. He always knew he wanted to be an electrician.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, he had it all clear. He knew exactly what he was going to do.
He knew exactly what he was going to do.
Uh-huh.
And Montgomery Ward used to do a nice thing at that time. They would send to... Now, you know there wasn't any furniture store in Crested Butte and quite a few other things that you couldn't get there. And they would send out order blanks with your name on it, and anybody that wanted to could pile up credits, money, you know, for tuition for a school, by interviewing these people and selling stuff up there to get rewards. And my oldest boy, thought that he wanted to do that, so he did. And so he had quite a lot, you know, when he got ready to go to school. Well, he wanted to go to this electrical school, and they didn't give the money to him. They sent it to the school.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never heard of that before.
And so they gave it to the school.
Sure.
And about all we helped with him was to get his pay his transportation up there. And he went to school there and graduated from that, and he's been an electrician ever since.
Did he come back here to Peonia? Is he here?
Yeah, well, he did come back to Peonia, and he married a Peonia girl.
Uh-huh.
Her name was Wanda Holaby.
Uh-huh.
And then he got a job as electrician up here in the mine, electrical, and he didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
One day he come to me, he says, well, of course, he was in the service. But he never had to go overseas.
Oh, he didn't.
The reason why he didn't have to was because he had had this electrical training, you know, and he was in the Navy.
Uh-huh.
They sent him to electrical school, and the top ones that got the top grades got to go on to another one, and of course he did because he'd already had a lot of it, you know. And so the second school he went to was in Virginia, and he loved his family and an old car. My youngest son said he must have had a horseshoe in every pocket because he never would have started out with that old car clear to Virginia, but he did. He took he took these back here, and he went, and he was still there when the war ended.
The war ended, still going to school, huh?
Yeah. When the war ended, and the youngest boy, he was graduated from high school here in 1942.
Mm-hmm. Did he go into the service too then?
He wanted to be a veterinarian.
Uh-huh.
But he was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And he went into the Air Force.
Uh-huh.
And he had quite a colorful experience too. He was based in... through most of it in Australia, and he flew missions over the Philippines, you know, of General McNarthen there.
Yeah.
And he was on 42 missions before he was grounded.
My goodness, that's an awful lot.
And he told me that when he'd be in there and they'd be shooting the wings off of his ride, you know, he said sometimes he got to where he was shaking so by the time they came down that he couldn't feed himself. So they grounded him after 42 missions.
Oh, no,
uh-huh. But he now lives up here at Bowie. But the oldest boy, he, as I said, he got a job in the mine. One day he came and said, Mother, he says, where's my discharge papers? He says, I didn't take all this electricity to work in a mine. He says, I'm going to go. So he went back to Chicago. He took his wife and went back to Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And this school was taught a good deal by demonstrating how to do these things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they put him in as an instructor. The students had to keep a notebook of everything they did and so on. But they had to have it all demonstrated. And he was there for a while. But his wife did not like Chicago. And so one day here they came driving in. They were on their way to California.
Uh-huh.
She had an uncle there that was working in the state employment office, and they said they'd get Paul a job. His name was Paul. They did.
Uh-huh.
And he lived at first at Azusa, and then he moved to different places, and now he lives in... Santa Rosa, California, in the northern part.
Mm-hmm.
There are four children, and their families live there.
Pretty place to be.
Uh-huh. I was out there this spring.
Yeah.
I went out in May.
Nice time of year.
I went out in May.
Yeah.
Well, My husband was a, after he came over here, he was strictly a cattle man. And he got so that it was about all he was interested in was his cattle. And as he got older, now as I told you, he was older than I am. And he was 90 years old when he died in 1972. And we still lived out there. Well, in the meantime, my father had died and I'd had some money and I bought this place here, although it wasn't this house, it was another old house that was here. So I got a fire and we had to turn it down and I had this. But anyway, I always thought when I bought this from an inheritance I had that I would get him to move up here. But he never wanted to leave his cattle.
He wouldn't, not even when he was 90. He was running cattle.
Well, I know, but he wasn't doing a great deal of the work himself.
Yeah, I know.
He wasn't, really but he was still attached to that. He wanted to be out there with his cattle. He didn't want to leave him there. So that's where he died, and I took care of him until, and kept him there until he died, because he got very senile before he died, and it was hard to take care of. But after I came over here, I never taught in the grade school anymore. They did want me to teach 1 year at Bowie, but that my little girl, she said, "Mama, when I come home from school, I want you to be there." And I said, "Well, okay. Okay, that just settles it. I won't teach." But I had her, I put her under the... And I had, when I was teaching over there at the Glacier, I'll back up a little bit and tell about that. There was a man who had been a principal of school at Crested Butte, had a piano for sale, that one that's in there. And it was kind of battered up, but he'd moved it around quite a lot. And he was going to teach this next year in Cripple Creek, and he didn't want to move that way up there. So he offered it for the new principal of the school, sold it to me. I bought it, and this old log house we had wasn't any place to put it, so I put it in the schoolhouse where I was teaching there. And I taught the kids from there, you know, use that piano down there. We used to have dances in there, too, on Saturday night.
Wonderful. Yeah.
And we had that school in there. And when I came over, we just loaded this in the back of a truck and moved it over here. And we came over here. Well, we bought this because of the school, because it was too hard to get the little girl back and forth to school, and she was in about the sixth grade, something like that, when we moved over here.
Yeah.
But then Joe ran cattle here, and we had some land way up around Somerset, where we take the cattle in the summertime, and he'd try to farm down, because he was raised a farmer, and he liked to try to raise corn and stuff, and it wasn't a very good place for it here. But we sold up there in the hills and kept about 100 head of cattle down here. And but he never wanted to. I took this girl under with a good piano teacher here. She was very, very good. And I hadn't done anything with the piano while I was raising my kids, so I decided I would take a few review lessons from her. So I was taking lessons too from her, both of us. And she had diabetes, and she found out she was going blind. So she said, "Della, I'm going to have to quit teaching." But she said, "I know from you, your experience." Of course, I took music when I went to Western State, too.
Yeah.
And she said, "You know more about music than anybody that's trying to teach piano here in piano." Yeah. And she said, "Will you take some of my pupils?"
Oh,
I says, "Oh, my."
Yeah.
I don't... I'd helped some of the neighbor kids with their lesson, you know, out in the country, but I had...
Sure.
I says, "I don't know what I'd have time to..." Well, she says, "Not my whole class." She said, "Just my younger ones. The older ones will get along by themselves. They'll get others, or they'll go on their own, or they'll do something. But these beginners, I hate to turn them over to just anybody. Will you take them?" So I took five. And I taught in a school, in a building over there close to the park. And close to the schoolhouse, and the kids had come over there. Well, I started out with them, and somebody else came and wanted, and somebody else did, and somebody. By the time school was over, that school's over with that year, I had 21 pupils.
So I kept teaching piano, teaching piano and so on. I took some voice when I was at Western State too, but I didn't do very much with that. So I taught there for a while, and finally afterwards, when I kept getting more pupils, I never did have more. 38 was the most I ever had at one time. And down here where the Hayes Drug Store is, there's a stairway that goes upstairs there above that. Well, I fixed up a studio up there so the kids could come there because it was too hard. And I was living in the country, you know.
I had to come in,
and it was too hard to come in and go to different houses and do things, so I had it there as a kind of a central place. And only time that I was out of that was when I went home back to Kansas when my mother was in her last sickness and took care of her till she died.
Uh-huh.
Then I came back here, and then when my father got sick, after he lived for, I think it was 12 years after she died, before he died,
mm-hmm.
and he'd want me to come back. Well, he knew we didn't have too much money, but he would send me a ticket to come back if I'd just come back and take care of him for a while. So I did that, and I'd have to give up my pupils for a while, build up a new one when I came back. I did that twice. And then after I came back here, I taught music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My husband, he sold enough cattle to pay the taxes with. I couldn't pay the taxes. We kept getting more land and more land and more land.
And more and more taxes.
And more and more taxes. So he sold enough cattle every year to pay the taxes, and I took in enough to buy the groceries and our church dues and our this dues and so on, you know, and that dues.
Uh-huh.
And our clothing and so on. And he took care of the taxes and the cattle and the cattle feed. And I don't know where to go from there.
Tell me about your daughter. We left her in high school somewhere, and I'm curious to know what.
Well,
we
sent her to Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
Now the youngest boy, he didn't get to go on to school and be a veterinarian. He was, and when he came back, this one, he came back and he used his GI Bill to go to a trade school in Denver where he took body work, you know.
Oh, okay.
Automotive.
Cars. Yeah.
And they lived there, and when he was married, he married a Bowie girl from up here that was in the same class that he was in school.
Mm-hmm.
They lived there for a long time, and then they finally moved down here, and he worked there. And since he's been here, he's worked at that some, but then he's working for Coors now, taking care of their property up there.
Uh-huh.
And he has an orchard of his own, and he has, well, anyway, and the girl, when she graduated in 1949 here at Paonia, class of 49, we called them the 49ers, and we sent her to Boulder. Now, we didn't help the boys very much with their education. They helped themselves. But we sent her. She went there 3 years. Well, the first 2 years, she was going, and in fact, she was really engaged to this fellow. She married a Paonia boy. His name is DeGrotenhuis. And Paul DeGrotenhuis.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to Boulder 2 years because he graduated. He was 2 years ahead of her, and he was already in Boulder. And we kind of depended on him to kind of look after her, and he did. And finally he said, well, what's the use of all of this? He says, if you folks, he made us a proposition, if you'll pay Della's tuition, Della Mary's her name, I was Della and she was Della Mary. Della Mary's, if you'll pay her tuition, the things that you've been doing, we live together and be married. They were married here in Paonia. And they went to school, and he was in his... After when she's in there 2 years, well, he graduated, got his degree, his A.B., and then, by that time, he was ready to go. He went to the ROTC, they went to Where was it, the Navy? Annapolis?
That's the Naval Academy.
Naval Academy. Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's where he went from there.
Uh-huh.
And he went out first.
Uh-huh.
Is that all of that? He went out first, and then she flew out there.
Uh-huh.
And that was where she got her third year of school.
Uh-huh.
And she majored in music.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
But she played well, what is it? Not a piccolo. What else is it she'd play out here?
Flute.
Flute. She was a flutist. And she auditioned when she was in the, when she was a freshman. And she went into the band,
uh-huh.
the
concert band.
There at, when she was only a sophomore. And then she played against some of the juniors too. Then she went out there after she didn't go to school, she didn't go to college anymore after
uh-huh.
the third year.
Uh-huh.
She went out there, and after he graduated, he was a junior, lieutenant junior grade,
yeah.
And they put him on Treasure Island out here
in San Francisco. Yeah.
She went out there and lived. Their first child wasn't born until after they were married, almost ready to come out. I think they were 3 or 4 years.
Uh-huh.
And he was born there at the Naval Hospital out there. And then they came back here and went back to Boulder, and he went and got his master's
uh-huh.
in personnel service
uh-huh.
and lived there.
Uh-huh.
And then his first job, they lived in Pueblo for 20 years. Because he went down there to work for the CF&I steel mills
uh-huh.
as a personnel man.
Uh-huh.
And but they have lived now for the last year in Lamar. He's working now for the state of Colorado in the rehabilitation office there.
Uh-huh.
Covers a little territory in the eastern part of course, working with people. Yeah, that's about all he could do there, because that's the only thing ever he has done. Yeah, that's right. And she's got 4 lovely children.
Some of these hers? Some of these children?
This is my son out in California.
Uh-huh.
This is my daughter and I.
Uh-huh.
And this is their Christmas table.
Oh, nice.
She and her husband, that's my daughter right
uh-huh.
there.
Uh-huh.
And this one works in Denver
uh-huh.
at Supreme Supers. And that one is still in Pueblo. She's going to school. You know, there's a college there.
Yeah.
Going to school part of the time there and boarding some other girls. Not boarding them, rooming them.
Uh-huh.
And this is some of the pictures when I took over and pictures. This was just taken in May when she and I went out there.
When you went out there.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've had 2 nice long trips in my life.
Uh-huh.
One of them I went to Italy.
Uh-huh.
I belong to the Catholic Daughters of America, and they chartered a plane in 1975, and I went down to Pueblo. They were in Pueblo, and she went with me.
Uh-huh.
We could take one member of her family, and so I took her.
Uh-huh.
And she paid her own way, except the first beginning. I paid our down payment, but she paid the rest of it. And we flew from Colorado Springs, because it was a direct flight instead of which Pueblo didn't have, to Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And boarded the train, the Pan American. Was it? Yeah, Pan American. I had a night flight from there to Rome.
Uh-huh.
From
uh-huh.
Chicago to Rome.
Uh-huh.
And we spent 4 nights in Rome. We were in Rome,
uh-huh.
in Florence, Naples, Sorrento,
uh-huh.
and we left did I say Florence? I guess
uh-huh.
I did.
Uh-huh.
Venice.
Venice. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we left from Venice, and because we had they didn't have enough. We couldn't take on as much fuel there at that airport because, you know, it wasn't as small. It didn't have big enough runway or something there. Yeah. Uh-huh. So we had to stop. We stopped in Ireland. We flew over Europe.
Uh-huh.
We could see the Matterhorn.
It's really something, isn't it?
Yes, flew over the Alps,
oh,
and we could see the White Cliffs of Dover, uh-huh. And we landed in at Shannon Airport
in Ireland
to refuel.
Uh-huh.
And we did a little bit of shopping there, and I have a scarf, a shawl, I mean. That I bought in Ireland. Mm-hmm. Made sure.
Yeah.
And that was quite. And before that, though, I went to with one of my neighbors here. I went to Hawaii.
Oh.
We went on a tour there. That was after my husband died. Now, my husband never thought he could leave those cattle in that farm. He didn't know what it is. And the only thing that I.
Farmers, right?
That's the only thing that I regret about
yeah.
The things that I've done is
yeah.
that he didn't ever go with me.
Yeah.
And I didn't do all these things until after he died.
Sure.
He died in 1972, May the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to see those old jets going around and thought, well, dear, wouldn't it be nice to ride in one of those? And I never will. But I did.
Yeah.
So we went nonstop from Denver to... Waikiki.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Exciting. Yeah.
And we were there 2 weeks.
Oh, my. That's amazing.
And I know when we went first class, believe me, we went to, we stayed in Sheraton hotels in the first,
uh-huh.
And, well, she stayed in one Hilton hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And all you had to do, we played our money out before to the travel agency here before we left. All you had to do was to go into all of these hotels have the eating places connected with the hotel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Order anything on the menu, except if you got drinks, you had to pay for it yourself. But anything on the menu, and they had some very pretty fancy things, believe me. And when they'd bring you the ticket... All I did, now Nina couldn't see very well. She could see far up, but she couldn't see the right or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
She's getting worse now. But anyway, I would write it for her, and I'd write down Nina Newton, Della Delmont, room so-and-so, and leave it there on the table.
Okay.
And even a trip, even the tips were taken care of.
Oh,
we didn't
great.
Have to even put out a tip.
That's great.
And, and our well, you didn't tell your talk to her. That's why I guess. But anyway, we went to four islands. We were in Oahu, Maui, Kauai,
uh-huh.
And the Big Island, Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
We were on all of those.
Oh,
we went from one island to the other by one of the local planes,
mm-hmm.
and so on. But when we got there, these buses, there were 43 of us on that tour,
mm-hmm.
and these buses that were there had a regular trained, he would explain things and answer questions and so on, the driver.
That's great.
And you didn't need to think he was just a bus driver. I was so surprised when I walked into one of the stores there in Honolulu and saw an album there that he had made, you know, a voice, you know. But he was so much fun, and he would talk to us. That is, he wasn't the only, we had a different one on every island. But we surely enjoyed that an awful lot.
Now, let's go all the way back to your childhood. I want to hear about that year when you had scarlet fever. How sick were you?
Well, I was so sick that I almost died.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, nearly always, the fever itself wasn't... It was the complications what lasted. And I had what they called acute Bright's disease.
Uh-huh.
And... in order to get the poison from my body that the kidneys refused to handle,
mm-hmm.
they put me in a big tub of hot water mm-hmm. and put a blanket up around here and just steam me.
You know? Steam you, good Lord. That is.
Just about every night for a while until they got me here. But anyway, my little sister, I had two sisters. I was the oldest, and then there was another one 3 years younger than that, and she didn't have it very hard at all. But my little sister died.
Oh, my goodness.
She was 2.5 years old.
Uh-huh. And you were what?
I was 10.
You were 10.
Yeah, I was 10.
She was just too little to be able to...
Yeah, well, it kind of settled in her throat. She had something that was much like quinsy until it just choked up. And I don't know, they just couldn't handle her. You know, we lived out there 12 miles, and the doctor had to drive a team out there to get out there, so...
And besides, there wasn't all that much medicine.
No, there wasn't that much.
I mean, there was the steaming thing. What else did your mother have to do for you? Couldn't you remember?
Oh, I don't remember. One of the main things that I remember was that I spent my 10th birthday in bed, and the doctor that came to see me then brought me a rubber ball that had a picture of a face on it and where the tongue was or something. I'd squeeze it like this, he'd stick his tongue out. That's about all I remember. I was only 10. I don't remember what they did to me, but... Well, I do know one thing, too, that she used to make a tea out of watermelon seeds.
Out of watermelon seeds.
Pumpkin seeds, and fed me that, you know. And I had to watch out, and I was afraid when I went to have children that I would have trouble with my kidneys, but I didn't. I finally just licked it and gotten so that I would... be all right. Oh, yes, I should tell you about my oldest child that died just...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was just about to have this other baby, and the doctor had given me some pills to take. They were called Henkel pills. They were little pills that were pink, looked mm-hmm. a little bit like candy. And we had, after we moved back to Norton, Kansas, my husband and I, we lived in Nebraska for a little while, as I told you, and then we moved to Kansas, and that's where we went to Norton, Kansas. We had a sink, and we had a shelf up above that sink.
Mm-hmm.
And I would take this medicine and put it up there on that shelf. And we had a coal stove in our dining room, a coal stove in our kitchen, too, as far as that's concerned. But we used to like to spend the evenings in there. And one evening, I went in there. I left this little fellow, 17 months old. He was in a high chair. And he was close enough to where he could climb over to the sink. I had no idea that he could do that, you know.
Uh-huh.
He climbed over to the sink. And I came in. I went in the other room to build a fire in the stove so it heated up, you know, warm it so he could go in there for the evening. And when I came in... there, he had been up there and he'd got my medicine and dumped it out in the sink. I didn't know he'd taken any of it. I really didn't until he went into convulsions.
Oh, Lord.
And I found out that there was a little amount of strychnine in that. I don't know why anybody would make pills like that, but there was. I could take it, but he couldn't. And we got the doctor there and pumped his stomach and did everything we could for him. We even had another doctor there for consultation, but he died.
Oh, what a shame. Yeah.
He died. He was my first, and his name was Lawrence.
Uh-huh.
And then he died on a Thursday night.
Uh-huh.
And Joe had always lived, my husband had always lived over in Nebraska. And his parents are down there, and they took this child and buried him over there in Stamford, Nebraska. I wasn't able to be up. They gave me some kind of a sedative, so, you know.
Yeah. So you couldn't be there.
And I couldn't be there. I had to stay home.
Yeah.
We had a little funeral for him there in Norton, Kansas, and then went on over to Nebraska. I didn't go to any of it. I wasn't able. I was down. They had me down.
Yeah.
And then this other baby was born on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
They buried him on Saturday. And Paul, that one, right?
Paul.
That's Paul. That's Paul. I don't think I've got a picture of Adrian here anyplace. This is Paul's wife out there in California. I took that. My daughter she came over to see me. She was going to come over and see me. She comes and spends a little time with me each year if she can.
That's nice.
And she's been a wonderful comfort to me. I had to go back. Joe died in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
And the year of 1972, yeah, was the centennial of Norton, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent invitations to everybody who had graduated from that high school there to meet there, and they had a whole week celebration.
For heaven's sake, that's really...
A whole week. They had a drama, something every night. Uh-huh. They had this and something. They had things, and on Thursday was the day that all the high schools were to have their big reunions, all the different classes and everything. So, well, after Joe died, I went from... my sister lived at Riverton, Wyoming at that time, and she was down at the funeral, and I went home with them and stayed for about 3 weeks. Then I came home, and the 10th of June, June was when their celebration was in Norton, Kansas. And I knew that if I went home, I ought to have a car there. The kids didn't hear to me driving way back there by myself.
Yeah.
And I knew I ought to have a car because they lived in different parts. Some of his people lived in Nebraska. Some of his lived in Kansas too. But they, between, you know, the towns of Alma,
sure,
Nebraska, and Norton, Kansas, and so on.
Yeah.
So I got a lady who was living right across the road from me down below here to go with me. And I said, you know what? I'll pay your way back on a bus if you'll go with me to drive the car, to help me drive the car on the way out there and be with me. And so what we did was to go to Pueblo first. That's a little out of our way, but put us partway on our way toward Kansas. We stayed overnight with Della Mary, and then we left there and went through Norton, up and around, and went to Norton, Kansas, and we got back to Kansas that next day. Didn't have to stay all night any place on the day. And before I had left here, I told this dumb doctor here that I said, you know, I've got some kind of a lump in my side here. It's bothering me a little bit. Oh, he says, I think that's an adhesion or something. He was very busy that day. They'd only had two doctors, and he knew he had a whole office full out there, and he didn't want to take time to examine me before I left to go out there. And I said, how could that be? I haven't had any surgery since 1948. I said, how could that? Well, he says, sometimes it shows up. And he says, we'll see about it next time you come in. Well, I left and went back there, and when I got back to Kansas, I got sick. And I was staying with Joe's nephew and his wife in Norton, Kansas, and they worked at a place that used to be the tuberculosis sanitarium that was made into when they got that kind of lick, that was made into a rehabilitation kind of a place for retarded adults.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, they were working with us out at that place. And she didn't get home until sometime in the evening, but I had the house to myself. And people that I had known there in Norton came to see me, and this one came to see me, and so on. A lot of them came to see me, and I was there about, and I said, really, I'm sick. And then I had to wait until she got home at 4 o'clock, and I told her, I'll call a doctor. So she called a doctor. And he said, well, take her, she got any fever? And Sadie said, do you have any fever? I said, I don't know. I'm pretty warm, but I thought it was this old hot Kansas weather. And she took my temperature, and I had 101.
Oh, wow.
And she said, she told him, he said, well, if it's, it was 4 o'clock. And he says, I'm ready to go, but if she does have a fever, why, I will, you bring her up.
Mm-hmm.
So she took me up there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a clinic that two or three doctors had, you know, and this waiting room had other people in it there, you know, and I was like, sat down there to wait a little bit until he could get to me, and all at once I knew I was going to vomit.
Oh, dear. Right.
And I got up and started to say, oh, I'm going to throw up, yelling. Here came these nurses with a... with a pan, you know.
Uh-huh.
Green as it could be, what I threw up.
Goodness.
And the doctor says, I want this gal now. And he took me into his office there, and he says, girl, you've got a hot gallbladder.
Oh.
And he said, you'll have to go to the hospital. I says, I can. We're going to have our reunion tomorrow. He says, I don't care. You're going to miss it. He said, you're going to... So he never let me go home. He sent me right straight to the hospital.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it took them 11 days to get my fever down because I had so much... this had been building up, you know.
Sure.
And if that doctor had taken care of me here when I told him, I would have avoided all that.
Sure.
But he didn't believe.
He was in a hurry.
He was in a hurry, and he just thought it was partly in my mind, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, anyway... I was back there, and so he said, well, you'll have to have this out. He says, you can go back and have it done at Grand Junction or someplace if you want to, but I can't guarantee when you won't have, when you'll have another attack. And so that was in June, and all of the kids from the high school came to see me, and not only my class, I had more company in that hospital. You can shake a stick at it. And the doctor, the kid, Mercy said, well, you sure are. But anyway, they did. Most of them came to see me, even if I didn't get to go to the reunion. But anyway, the doctor wouldn't operate on me then until that kind of cooled off.
Mm-hmm.
And on the 21st of August, I had my gallbladder out right there in Norton, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter flew out there and drove my little car home for me.
Uh-huh.
Drove my car home for me.
Uh-huh.
And then I stayed there until I was able to fly home. I flew home. But I didn't get home until the second day of October.
Uh-huh.
Because I was so weak after being in the hospital twice. I had to stay there. I was in there first, you know, for the infection, and then I was in there to have the gallbladder for the operation.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get back. I spent a long time. I'm in Norton, Kansas. Of course, I grew up there, and I saw a few people. But she was so sweet and loyal. My daughter, I thank God for my daughter. I don't know how many times. And she came to see me, you know, she came out there, and she was going to come see me then this spring. And well, I had pneumonia here in March, 2 years ago, last March. And,
mm-hmm.
And this daughter-in-law that was here, she came and took care of me, stayed here, and took care of me. And the doctor says, if you want to take care of her, she'd be better off here, and she wouldn't go to the hospital. So she took care of me. I had double pneumonia, I had it in both lungs.